most people don't realize that their insurance, it's an adversarial relationship. We all think of insurance as being there to help you when you need it. The insurance company does not look at it that way. And neither does Social Security, to be fair. This is true for both. It is difficult to get these benefits, and that is intentional. It is an adversarial relationship. They are not there to be your friends. They are there to find reasons to deny your benefits. It's a business model. They obviously, it costs them money to pay these benefits, so they deny most claims, and then they wait and see who pushes back. Most people don't push back. Most people, when they're told that they don't qualify, are sick and exhausted and do their best to try to go back to work, or they quit and they stop working because they don't know better. And unfortunately, under ERISA, you have to appeal a denial within 6 months or you permanently lose the ability to pursue that claim.
For many people living with migraine, the disease can take an enormous toll on work, identity, and financial security. At some point, you might find yourself wondering if you can even keep working or whether disability is the next step. But as many discover, applying for disability is far from simple. It can be a long, stressful, and emotional process, and not everyone who applies is approved, even with severe migraine. Today, we're joined by Stacey Monahan-Tucker, a leading disability lawyer. She has helped many people navigate this complex system. She'll help us understand what disability benefits really offer, why they're so hard to access for migraine, and how to make informed choices, whether you decide to apply or not. Stacey Monahan-Tucker, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Before we start this, I just want to address that a lot of us going through this process or having migraine affect our work really in any capacity is an enormously stressful experience. And a lot of us feel very isolated and even ashamed. And if you are feeling that you're the only one going through this, we would not be having this interview. This is so prevalent. I myself have had migraine, you know, dictate what I've been doing for work my entire adult life. You are so far from alone. The migraine community is here to support you and have your back as you're going through this. All right, so let's start. Starting with the basics, what exactly is disability insurance? What does it do and what does it not do?
That's a really good question. And disability insurance can mean different things depending on the context. There's Social Security disability insurance, which most people, if they've worked for any amount of time, including in the past, will be able to access. But it's not automatic. If you haven't worked, if you've only worked for a couple of years, if you worked sporadically, you might not have built up enough credits to access Social Security. So that's one type of disability, which is what a lot of people think of when they think of disability. If you are employed, especially if you're employed for a larger employer, most employers offer short and long-term disability as part of your benefits package. And a lot of people are not even fully aware of this because when you get hired and you look at your benefits package, most people are focused on their healthcare, which makes sense. You know that's what you're going to be using. But tucked in there are coverage for short and long-term disability, which will actually cover a lot more than Social Security does. Social Security has a max amount, depending on how much you make, of up to, I think now it's just over $4,000 a month. That's the absolute highest for people who were making hundreds of thousands of dollars. For most people who were employed at the time they became disabled, they're able to get usually about 60% of their former salary through disability. So while not as great as being able to maintain your former salary, that's a lot. For many people, that will be a lot more than the max that Social Security can provide. So I focus on helping people with the insurance they get either through their jobs or that they purchase separately. You can always go and purchase disability insurance and just have it as an individual policy that's linked to you. It's not linked to your job. That's another way of having disability insurance. Some people have both. They have it through work and they buy their own policy for additional peace of mind. I am familiar with Social Security because many of my clients are dealing with both. And insurance companies actually force you, if you've been disabled for usually more than a year or two, to apply for Social Security because their policies are set up to have it be an offset, which means that if you get Social Security, they subtract it from what they owe you. So they want you to apply for Social Security because for them, it's a win-win. If you're approved, they deduct it from what they owe you. If you're not approved, they point to that as evidence that you're not disabled and use it to terminate your claim. So I am familiar with Social Security because it plays in a lot with what I do. But to be clear, it's not what I specialize in. So I'm happy to answer questions about it and explain how it works and interacts. But I want to be clear, that's not my specific area of expertise.
Okay, so to be clear, you can apply for and qualify for both private and...
Absolutely.
Am I using the term correctly? Is the private insurance the one you apply for outside of your employer?
Yes, it's usually called an individual disability insurance, and you literally contact an insurance broker or an insurance company and you purchase your own policy. You're paying usually a few thousand dollars a year to have that insurance in case you need it. What you get through your job, usually either you pay nothing or you pay a very small amount each month, like pennies often, or a few dollars a month. And it's a benefit that you get through work and it's automatic. And so long as you become disabled before your last day at work, it is available to you. So if you are disabled and say you find out you're getting terminated because you're not able to meet the requirements of your job because of your disability, you can still apply for disability. You can make a retroactive claim if you didn't realize at the time you were disabled when you left work. If you leave work because you just can't do it anymore and later you realize, I had disability insurance. I didn't even know. You can make a retroactive claim in most states. That's a state specific based on the law, but most states will allow you to make a retroactive claim. So knowing that this is a benefit, just like your health insurance, no one would hesitate to use their health insurance or their vacation time. This is the same thing. And understanding what your benefits are and how to use them is an important part of any job. It's part of your payment package.
With individual insurance plans for disability, is that something that you would have to have got way before you started showing signs?
They will look at your medical records for the past several years. And if you've been treating for migraines, they'll still insure you, but they may require that you carve out migraines as something that they are willing to cover. So they don't do that with your group disability insurance that you get through your employer. Your employers are not allowed to discriminate against you for healthcare conditions. So long as your migraines enable you to fulfill the requirements of your job, that what's called the material duties of your job, it should be irrelevant. It's when it starts interfering with that and making it so you can't regularly be there during your work hours. Your schedule is too erratic. You're not able to focus or concentrate. The pain keeps you from participating. That's usually when you get to the point where you'd want to make sure that your employer knows, see if there's any accommodations that can be reached to allow you to keep doing your job. And if not, that's when you need to talk with your doctor about whether or not applying for disability makes sense in your situation. The insurance company only cares about any claims you have made. So long as you have not attempted to go out on disability and made a claim with them in particular, it's a non-issue. If you took, let's say, FMLA because you were sick and needed to stay at home, or if you went out on short-term disability, you can go on short-term disability within the first year. It's only the long-term disability that has the pre-existing condition limitation. So if you went out for, let's say, 6 weeks and things got under control and you were able to return to work, and then a year later, your migraines, it had another flare-up, and this time it didn't resolve, and you were out on short-term disability again, and then after short-term disability, long-term disability kicks in. If you'd been working for over a year at that point, you don't have to worry about it.
And with that, like with short-term disability and FMLA, how is wage replacement different than job protection?
Wage replacement is not required in most states. There are states that offer wage replacement as part of a state program. Job protection That has nothing to do with your salary. They may have to protect your job for a period of time, but they don't have to pay you. Many companies do because, again, it's part of their payment package to you are some protections. Usually that's set up as short-term disability. And most companies offer short-term disability anywhere from 3 months to some now go up to a year. And they could be paying anywhere from 70 to 100% of your salary in that time. Every company's different. There's no law that requires them to do anything in particular there. It's a choice that they make, and it's part of your total employment package. So they don't have to do it. They do have to comply with state and federal law in terms of protecting your job. Being on disability does not protect your job. They don't have to keep having you employed and providing you benefits if you are disabled. So a lot of people are surprised to learn that, especially because they get their health care through that. And so being terminated involves losing your health care. You can go on COBRA. If you have a spouse or a partner who's employed, or you're young enough to have a parent and be on your parents, those are all alternative ways to get coverage. But the next step then, so if you are approved for Social Security, you get Medicare coverage. And that's why a lot of people want to also be approved for Social Security, because it will provide them health care.
You don't have to take it in all at once. You can return to extended interviews at your own pace with the All Access Pass.
If you are overwhelmed by all of these potential benefits and you're not really sure how to read into it, and it's not long-term disability, so for like FMLA or short-term disability, is going to someone like HR, is that recommended or is that risky? How would someone go through that?
HR is supposed to be there to help you, no question about that. HR is familiar with the healthcare benefits provided because people call and ask about that a lot. HR is often not very familiar with how FMLA works, how short-term disability works, how long-term disability works, because it doesn't come up as often for them. And what I have found is that they frequently give misinformation, not intentionally. I don't think it's an intentional trying to sabotage you. For example, I had somebody call me just yesterday who works for a large national company. And while out on disability, he was included in a layoff and his benefits were terminated at the same time. And he called to ask why. And they said, oh, well, once you're not employed, you don't qualify for ongoing benefits. That's not true. It says very clearly in the short-term disability plan that if you're disabled at the time your employment ends, those benefits continue. So again, I don't think the person he was talking to was trying to mislead him intentionally. I think she didn't know. And I think that happens more often than people realize. HR individuals only know what they've dealt with and what they've been trained on. And if it hasn't come up, they're often as much in the dark as you are. So asking for the original documents, if you're on, ask for your company's leave of absence plan. Ask for your company's short-term disability plan. Ask for it in writing. They're required to give it to you. If you ask for the short-term disability plan and it's covered by, there's a federal statute called ERISA that governs all welfare, they're called welfare benefits, all the benefits you get through work, basically. Covers your health care, covers your short and long-term disability, covers any life insurance you get, covers any severance, any 401k plans. It's governed by very specific laws and regulations. If you request a copy of a plan in writing, they have to provide it to you in 30 days or they start incurring fees, penalties of up to $110 a day. So you are entitled to this information. And a lot of times people in HR don't know this because they're not ERISA experts. They're not benefits experts. They're more focused on payroll and usually healthcare. Outside of that, they don't always have a lot of information. So you want to get the actual documents that govern everything so you can look at it yourself and say, hey, look at this. This says X and you told me Y. most of the time, when it's pointed out to them, they'll realize they made a mistake and apologize and move on.
Are there ERISA experts that people can contact? How would they go about doing that?
I would be one, yes. There are a lot of attorneys who focus in this area because it is a specific, somewhat niche area. And so, yes, there are absolutely people you can call and contact and ask questions. Most attorneys are happy to do a consultation and answer some questions. And unfortunately, the reason we're very willing to do this is that if you're making a disability claim, sooner or later, the insurance company is going to terminate your benefits. They might deny them outright. Most people don't realize that their insurance, it's an adversarial relationship. We all think of insurance as being there to help you when you need it. The insurance company does not look at it that way. And neither does Social Security, to be fair. This is true for both. It is difficult to get these benefits, and that is intentional. It is an adversarial relationship. They are not there to be your friends. They are there to find reasons to deny your benefits. It's a business model. They obviously, it costs them money to pay these benefits. So they deny most claims and then they wait and see who pushes back. Most people don't push back. Most people, when they're told that they don't qualify, are sick and exhausted and do their best to try to go back to work, or they quit and they stop working because they don't know better. And unfortunately, under ERISA, you have to appeal a denial within 6 months or you permanently lose the ability to pursue that claim. And they explain this in the denial letter, but again, most people don't understand that. And if they do, they just send in a letter saying, you got this wrong. I'm sorry, maybe you didn't understand. I'm really sick. My doctor says I'm really sick. My doctor completed your form. So please reevaluate and fix your mistake. The insurance company looks at that and says, you didn't submit any new information and you're done. After that, the only thing you can do is bring suit against the insurance company or the plan. And that sounds like a nuclear option, but in fact, insurance companies are sued tens of thousands of times a year. It's part of their business model. Once you bring suit, then the insurance company's outside counsel looks at it and usually looks to negotiate a buyout of the benefits, which, depending on your job, your age, what your disability is, assuming it's migraine related here, and your salary, you can negotiate sometimes a very large lump sum payment, and then you're done with the insurance company. If you're able to, you could go back to work the next day. If not, you can hold on to that money and invest it and have some security while you focus on your health issues.
So what do we have to prove that we qualify for SSDI?
For SSDI, you have to prove that you are disabled from any occupation. That doesn't necessarily mean that a CEO is going to be asked to go work at McDonald's. They do look at your education and your background and your qualifications to determine what your job is and what your disability is. From a health perspective, both Social Security and private disability insurers are usually focused on the idea of whether or not you can sit at a desk. They don't like to look at what I view as the mushier aspects of health. They don't like to look at fatigue. They don't like to look at pain. They don't like to look at the irregularity of your situation, that some days you might be fine and some days you literally can't get out of bed and have to lie in a dark room all day. And that maybe you could occasionally answer an email, but even that makes you feel sick for hours. Insurance companies don't like that. When they send your doctor an initial form to fill out, I was actually just looking at Hartford's today because I was helping a client fill it out. It asks how long you can sit, stand, and walk. And it asks if you've had any MRIs or x-rays or any lab work done. That's all it asks. obviously, that does not necessarily tie in to the symptoms that somebody with migraines or TBI will necessarily be experiencing. It doesn't, you don't have back problems. You're not precluded from sitting per se, but you may feel nauseous. You may feel dizzy. You may have to lie down for those reasons. The forms they ask a doctor to fill out don't even give them any space to address that. And that's intentional. That's very intentional. They don't like these claims, and so they try to avoid them. So from the get-go, whether it's Social Security or private disability, you're in a situation where your doctor's already having to kind of play with the language to make clear what your disability is. Once you make that claim for Social Security, this is true for Social Security and private disability. You'll sign a bunch of forms. They'll gather all your records. And then after they gather your records, they will often contact your doctors. They'll have their own doctors look at it. And then their own doctors will contact your doctors for what's called a peer review. And they consult. If your doctor doesn't return the call because your doctor's busy and your doctor doesn't get paid for these, the insurance company and Social Security look at it as lack of support for your claim. So that's another hurdle that a lot of people find themselves having to deal with. Their doctors may support their claim and agree that they're disabled, but doctors don't get paid for all of this extra work, and insurance companies know that. And so they require all of these documents, they require all of these phone calls, and if a doctor doesn't respond, they choose to view it as an announcement that your claim is not supported.
Ugh, that is terrible.
It is. It is a big problem. And we all already know that it can be difficult to get in to see our doctors. It can be difficult to get their attention, not because they're not supportive, but because they have a lot on their own plates and a lot of patients and a lot of ways they're already trying to support their patients, asking them to do all of this additional work that they can't bill insurance for and that they are essentially donating their time for can be challenging. And I'm encountering more and more situations where doctors won't fill out forms at all. They just say, we don't do disability forms. That's Social Security, that's private insurance, that's any insurance. And that leaves you up a creek without a paddle because medical support is the key and primary basis for any disability claim.
So are there just no options at that point for someone whose doctor won't do it?
Find a different doctor. And that's where you have to start getting a little creative. If the doctor who treats your migraines primarily is unwilling or unable, according to the rules of their practice, to complete disability forms, the next step may be finding a doctor or approaching a doctor you already see and asking them to do it. Naturopaths are fine. Social Security is required to accept them as a medical doctor. Most private insurance contracts say that they will accept any doctor who is acknowledged as a medical professional in the state in which they're practicing. So long as your state acknowledges naturopaths as practicing medical physicians, that's not a problem. And naturopaths are usually much more willing to take the time to provide this sort of documentation.
I want to ask again, like with the very restrictive forms, how doctors can sort of phrase your limitations to try to set you up better for success with migraine, but also I've heard about the one-year rule where you have to have continuous symptoms, and so a fluctuating condition like migraine can be difficult with that. Can you sort of put those all together and how someone with migraine could do that?
Absolutely. You are correct. All of that can be very challenging. One of the most difficult situations I encounter, people want to work. Their identities are wrapped up in it. Their social lives often are. Obviously, their careers, what they've been working towards. Nobody is looking to sit at home and live off of disability. It's nobody's first choice. So what people often do is push themselves to work as much as they can, often working part-time or seeking accommodations. As you very accurately noted, that same effort can sabotage somebody when they are looking to make a disability claim. Insurance companies offer part-time disability. Social Security does not. Social Security is an all or nothing thing. And so it can be difficult to get Social Security if you are not completely disabled from work. You can, for private disability, make an application for part-time disability. Your doctor can completely support that, but insurance companies like data. One of the things that I found very helpful is keeping a headache journal. If you are making a disability claim and it's been denied, the next step is an appeal. One of the reasons you don't need a lawyer or anybody to help you when making a disability claim. There are people who do it, and it's because they're sick and they're overwhelmed, and to them it's worth it. To them it's worth paying somebody to deal with this for them. That is completely valid, and I have clients who do that and happy to help. But for a lot of people, they need their disability benefits. They don't want to give any portion of it to an attorney. So you don't need one to make a claim. You really don't. When you do need an attorney is when you're doing the appeal. Also, because if the appeal is denied, the next step is litigation. They're preparing for litigation. Witnesses aren't allowed in the litigation, but you can put in witness statements into the claim file. So you can put in statements from your friends and loved ones and coworkers about how they've seen you not be able to do this. You can put in your own statement about what you've been dealing with. Put in your headache diaries. Put in all your medical records. Put in the outside testing. Put in medical journal articles about what you specifically are dealing with, because judges aren't doctors. And judges are used to having experts that they can learn from in the course of a litigation. So we put that information in. Social Security, you have like four levels of appeals with Social Security that ultimately can end up in front of a district court judge. That can take 2 to 3 years. Most people are at least somewhat aware that Social Security will largely reject you in the first round. This is a situation where it actually, again, makes a lot of sense to get a Social Security attorney, which I am not. But under Social Security has very specific rules about what a Social Security attorney can charge you. It's not that much money. They can at most take up to 25% of the back benefits owed to you with a limit of, I think it's now $9,500. And, you know, $9,500 is not nothing. But if it takes that off of your plate and lets somebody else manage all of that for you, somebody who is familiar with the process and knows what needs to be done instead of trying to navigate it on your own.
This has been so helpful. One, where can we follow your work?
Let's see, blog is at mtlawpc.com. And I do a lot of these interviews often with migraine institutions. So a quick Google of my name, Stacey Monahan Tucker, will likely come up with a lot of information. And one of the things that I've been trying to make sure people realize, as all of these layoffs are occurring nationwide, you can make a claim for disability even after being informed that you're being laid off. And that's true if you've been working part-time, and they are not allowed to terminate your benefits if you are already on disability and you get laid off. It's important for people to realize this, because with everything that's happening right now, you do have options. And if you're somebody who's been pushing through because you love your job and it's who you are, and then you get laid off, there's a really good chance you're included in the layoff because your symptoms are affecting your job performance, and you shouldn't be penalized for that. You have disability insurance for a reason.
Okay, and two, if someone is starting this process, even if they're just considering, should I do this? Should I try to fight through? Are there any resources in particular you would suggest that they check out?
The Social Security website, if you're looking at Social Security, actually has a lot of information on there about the process and how it works. You can also see what your benefit would be if you were to make a claim. For you, for somebody who's thinking about it through work, I would encourage them to start with their human resources and say, you know, don't everybody wants to try to power through and look strong at work. They are required to give you accommodations if they're able to, and they are required to give you the information about the benefits available to you. So get that information. Educate yourself about what your options are so you don't find yourself suddenly scrambling after the fact. It can be a lot harder to gather this information once you've been terminated. So if that's on your radar at all, you want to know, you want to gather your information while you're in control and you're making the decisions.
This is perfect. Thank you so much, Stacey, for being here on the Migraine World Summit. It has been enormously helpful, and I really appreciate all the work you're doing for people like us who are really struggling.
I'm happy to be here and happy to answer more questions if anyone has any. It's a big chunk of what we do.